Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff Jarrett.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I am Luke Owen and I'm joined by Denise Salcedo. How's it going, Denise?
It's going good. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday indeed. It is the best show of the week. Categorically the best show of the week. But yes, we need to get into the show itself. We're talking about Sting. Of course, we're talking about Sting. What else are we going to talk about? AEW and Impact? That's old news. Now it's all about Sting. Here is the show. So, yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a... I mean, really, there was no other title that we could have done for this week's episode. Like, usually, I get up on a Friday morning, I'm like, okay, what's the news? You know, I'll have a look at what the news is. What's the news topic? Really, there was only one thing to talk about. It was either this or the Impact thing. And, yeah, it's just like, yesterday, like, the wrestling world went crazy in 1 2-hour show of AEW Dynamite, because not only did Kenny Omega win the AEW World Heavyweight Championship from Jon Moxley, he is now partnered with Don Callis, who in turn is partnered with Impact, and AEW are now partnered with Impact Wrestling. We're going to find out more about that on Impact next Tuesday. But also, Sting, it's Sting, the icon Sting, the man called Sting, debuted for All Elite Wrestling in a segment with Cody and Dustin Arnanson and Darby Allin against Team Taz. And I said this in the AEW review yesterday. I listened to a lot of wrestling review podcasts. Yesterday was one of the days where I was listening to every single one I could get my hands on. Like, I was listening to you, I was listening to Wrestling Over Radio, I was listening to Going in Raw, I was listening to Fightful. I just wanted to hear people talk about this moment. And it was just this like sort of shared feeling of like excitement of being like, Sting debuted. And which is weird because like it's 61-year-old Sting, but we're all like dead excited.
It doesn't even matter, like the age.
Right? No, it's amazing. But like, yeah, I mean, what did you make of the moment?
Okay, so first of all, did you see my tweet?
Yes, I did.
When everything was going down, you know, it was crazy. So first of all, like you mentioned, watching my show, first of all, thank you. And secondly, I was like crazy writing down all of these notes. AEW sent a press release like immediately following that. Everybody was posting like all of this stuff. So like it felt very chaotic in that like whole like 1 hour, hour and a half spear. And so I went to yours and Louis' page and I was like, are they watching right now or are they asleep? Like, I'm not really sure what's going on. And I think Louis, his last tweet was like 4 hours ago prior to all of this. And in yours was a couple hours prior to that too. And I was like, oh, they're totally asleep right now. I was like, they have no idea what's happening. So I had to, you know, basically tweet, somebody wake them up. So I thought that was kind of hilarious. But dude, it was so crazy. But I got to say, it makes me so happy because you just said something very pivotal. So you said you wanted to listen to all of these podcasts and listen to all of these reactions. I will tell you that yesterday, I can almost guarantee that anybody who has any sort of podcast saw a very large increase in their numbers. Why? Because people felt the exact same way that you did. They were like, oh, I want to know what so-and-so thinks. I want to know what so-and-so thinks. And that's how I felt too. Immediately, I wanted to do the same thing. And it's like, yeah, it doesn't matter like if you have your own show or your own opinion or whatever you want to talk about wrestling, because especially there was this just this big moment. And for the most part, I think from what I've been seeing, I think everybody sort of feels on the same page where they feel like this was a big moment. And, you know, some it may not be like a game changer. Obviously, you know, AEW still has got a long way to get to the WWE level, as we know, just because, you know, the difference in history and time length and all of that. But it definitely felt big in the sense that Tony Khan has essentially been out here, you know, promoting his shows and, you know, kind of exaggerating things every now and then. But this time you got to give the man some credit, some kudos, because he finally paid off the whole, the power of balance is shifting in wrestling. And I was one of those people who are like, dude, you shouldn't have said this. Come on, you're over exaggerating. And I had to take back everything that I said, because the whole thing with Sting was just, it was awesome. It was a great moment.
Yeah, like it was that and the Impact partnership as well. Like, you know, there were a lot of people who were super mad at TK like the day after, because they were like, you were talking about Pac. Come on, man. Like, that's not the balance of power shifting. That's Neville coming back. And Tony Khan's just there like looking at all those replies being like, oh, just you wait. Just you wait. Give me a couple more weeks.
Luke, I was one of those people. I was on my podcast going like, dude, you lose so much credibility when you do this. I even like put out a tweet saying like, you can't be doing this. Like, people are going to start not believing you. And then when you really are hyping something up, no one's going to buy it. And they're just going to be like, ah, it's just Tony Khan being Tony Khan. And so, you know, I had to take my words back and swallow them, because, hey, he actually delivered this time. And it's crazy too, because, you know, we had the Sting return. We have this, you know, revelation or this big reveal that Impact and AEW are now working together. And it's crazy to think that the third most talked about topic is the fact that Kenny Omega is now AEW World Champion. And there's just a bunch within all of that. I mean, it was wild. It was a wild night.
Like, Moxley had a 277-day reign. Like, that's not a short reign. He didn't have it for a month or anything, and then they just switched the title over. Like, he had it for pretty much all of 2020.
It's wild. I mean, I can't stop saying wild today. It's because it really was. Like, last night was so stressful. I was legit stressed, because I was like, okay, I got to get this show up. I got to get my notes out. I got to make sure I tweet so that I get some hits out. And then, like, third of all, like, I got to make sure that the news is being posted and whatnot. But I loved it, though, because the better something is in wrestling, the more people are talking about it, and the more you finally feel like you're watching something that is fun and cool and newsworthy.
Yeah, it was so awesome. I saw your tweet in the morning, so, you know, a lot of people replied to it as well, with like, they, you know, gotta wake Luke up and find out what he's thinking on this. And like, the thing that made me laugh the most is that, you know, I don't open Twitter, I don't open Discord, I don't open YouTube or anything like that. But if I'm going to watch a show like this, like, I don't even do it from watching Raw, and I don't tend to usually care about Raw. I just don't want things to be spoiled for me in case anything big does happen. So, like, I open up Twitter and all of a sudden there's just people like me, like, oh, if you're looking at Twitter now, go away, stay away from Twitter now. And I'm like, oh man, I'm so glad that I did not open up this platform first. And
so, like, what's the process?
I just sit down and I watch the show. I open up my notes, I sit down and I watch the show, and then once all that's done, I then go onto Twitter to see what people are talking about.
You know what? I'm exactly the same way when it comes to Taylor Swift albums. No lie. I do not go on Twitter when she reveals any sort of documentary. You'll notice that I'm very, very silent when Taylor releases anything, because I like to have the moment, you know? So I kind of feel like you're, you know, you're in this moment. You don't have anybody else's like opinions embedded in your head. They're your own authentic opinions.
So on the question of what could be next for Sting, I love the fact that, like, Sean reported yesterday that no one knew that he was there, which has been backed up by the Bucks since then. They were on John Alba's podcast and said that they hid him in his own trailer for like the entire day, like minutes before the segment they brought him out. And as they were walking through the back, all of a sudden everyone's head starts to be like, what?
Sting's here. And like, you know, Sean said that he got a text from someone just minutes before it happened saying, like, if you're not watching Dynamite, you need to switch the channel right now. So like that was really cool. But Dave Meltzer has said on Wrestling Observer Radio, he's going to be a regular on television. They wanted this idea of a big star from the old generation, TNT, being back as a regular. Whatever physical stuff he does, they're going to have to do it very safely. There will be physical stuff, but I don't think he'll be taking any bumps or anything like that. But he's in. He's going to be a character in some form. Now, Sting said earlier this year that he could wrestle again if he has successful surgery because he had spinal stenosis, which is what Edge had. So we've seen in 2020, Edge had that successful surgery and was able to get back into the ring. He was in the Rumble, the greatest wrestling match ever, et cetera, et cetera. So there is the possibility that Sting could have one last run per se. But as it currently stands, according to Meltzer, he's not having big matches. So I guess that my question to you is, like, what would you like to see from Sting in AEW in this scenario?
I just think I want to see something creative. And last night we had that big moment feel, and I hope that they preserve it. They preserve the feeling. You don't want it to be like, oh, it's Sting. He's on this week. Yeah, great. Okay, whatever. Moving on. No, I want them to preserve the fact that, like, hey, this is Sting and this is a big deal that he's even on here. And I think I would like to see, you know, some big moments. I don't know what those moments are, but I would like to see them for him because, you know, after WCW, like, yeah, you know, a few years later, we did see him in WWE and he had some great moments in there, but I don't necessarily think they were those kind of moments that you would expect somebody like Sting, the icon, to essentially have.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, I think that the WWE run was like, it's a real shame because I wanted it to be so good. Like when he debuted at the Survivor Series 2014, I was like, oh, finally, Sting's in WWE. We're going to have that Sting WrestleMania match. There's so much here for them to do. And all it led to was a Triple H match, which was, I think we could safely say now, was misjudged. In that, like, people did not want to see WWE versus WCW. It'd been dead for 20 years. And then it was the Seth Rollins match, which ended in, you know, an absolute disaster. And it was very unfortunate for both men. Sting, perhaps more so. So, like, the WWE run was, it's a bad taste. Like, I want to see something good for Sting. If he can get the successful surgery, if he can get into the ring a couple of times, I would like to see, you know, two pay-per-view matches a year from Sting. I don't want to see him wrestling. Maybe, like, one episode of Dynamite, you build up as this really big thing, like, oh my God, Sting's wrestling on TNT, and it's the first time in 20 however many years that he's doing this. But I don't want to see him having matches every week. Like, I don't want to see him become a overexposed character. I want to see him, like, keep Sting special. You've got something really special with Sting. So, like, make, you said that, you know, you keep that momentum, you keep that special aura and feeling about him. Don't put him out on TV every single week, because the more you do that, the more that aura goes away.
Exactly. And it's kind of hard to say, because imagine you have Sting on your roster and you're like, well, I want to use him every week because it's Sting. So that is very hard to say. And, you know, you mentioned the fact that you don't want him to be, you mentioned the fact that you want to see him maybe wrestle maybe twice a year. Let's just say that it's possible, because, yeah, I hate to say it, but you don't want to see him become, you know, somebody like The Undertaker, where you end up having these not so great matches, because obviously, you know, time just gets to you and that's just natural. But it is sad, because then, you know, people start talking and people start saying negative things, and then that really starts to take away from the grand aspect of whatever wrestler you're talking about, somebody like The Undertaker. And you don't want to see that happen to Sting.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm a TNA mark, you know, at least I was a TNA mark way back when, and I was a big Sting mark for when he was in TNA, but I am not one who is, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit that his main event matches in TNA towards the end of his run weren't particularly great, because what they were was Sting in a t-shirt, and he had a 9-minute match, 8 minutes of that was brawling through the crowd. It was, you know, just like smoke and mirrors. It was just like, what little can we do in the 9 minutes that we have? We'll just wrestle through the crowd for 8 minutes, get in the ring, Sting a splash, Scorpion death drop, then we'll, you know, 1, 2, 3, we'll end it there. So I don't want to see that from Sting. What I want to see, if we're going to get Sting matches, I want to see this be the big finale for Sting, the big retirement run for Sting, get that big retirement match, that big sort of closing moment for his illustrious career. A man
and
who
deserves it.
And he deserves a man who's been in WCW, TNA, WWE. He's been on these big platforms. And you're absolutely right. He totally deserves to have that big retirement moment. That's kind of what I would like to see from Sting. And then I don't know if I can, I'm not sure if like manager Sting is something I can particularly, like Arn Anderson as a manager makes sense. You know, like Jake Roberts, Tully Blanchard, like they make sense to manager. Sting as a manager, I'm not sure makes, like I can't quite visualize him. Like, is he just going to wear a suit or like a sports jacket, but with the makeup?
That is, and it's funny too, because if he were to dye his hair black, you would never know that this guy is, you know, 61 years old. You wouldn't know that whatsoever at all. 60,
I was stunned when I was reading it yesterday. I was like, he's 61. I was like, are you sure? Because like my dad is like 65, but like my dad looks about 20 years older than Sting does.
He could date my grandma, all right? I was telling that to my fiance. I was like, you know, because Sting and my grandma have the same birthday, March 20th. And I was like, yeah, you know what? They could be a couple. I could see it. Sting could be my grandpa, whatever. But yeah, no, it was just really cool though. But okay, so, you know, obviously there was the rumors. There had been rumors about Sting joining AEW. To be honest, when I heard those rumors, I laughed. I was like, it's not going to happen. Whatever. So were you like surprised that like even with the rumors, people were still surprised that it was, you know, him?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I predicted he was going to be there at Full Gear, like, because they had the merchandise thing where he'd stopped, like, WWE and his merchandise deal fell through. Like, they hadn't re-signed. So I was like, okay, I think he's heading to AEW. He's been tweeting about it all year long. I think he's going to be at Full Gear. This is kind of the genius of all of this, really. And I think the genius of AEW and Tony Khan and the creative team that got there is it was all one big misdirect. Because it didn't happen at Full Gear, I didn't expect it to happen at all. Or like, you know, not until the next pay-per-view. I thought they would save it for a big pay-per-view. And because the show was built so much around Moxley, Omega and the world title, I didn't think they were going to do anything big like Sting. So when Sting debuted, it was like oh my God. Sting is here. Like, so even though I, as a fan and sometimes a bit of a jaded fan who is like, you know, doing this as his daily job, that's reading all the news and stuff, I still was surprised and I'm proper marked out. Like this whole thing, I'm like, oh my God, I genuinely welled up. Like I got genuinely emotional about this. I had a tear that rolled down my eye. Helped by the fact
that you should have recorded your reaction.
Oh man, I know.
But nobody like, expected it. Nobody thought, hey, something's gonna happen. Let me, you know, record myself just in case. There's been times where I've tried to do that and then nothing happens.
Yeah, like I said to Ollie, like I really wish we'd done a live reaction to the show. Like in hindsight, I really wish we'd done a live reaction because we could have done the Sting thing, the AEW and the title change and the Impact thing. I really wish we had done. But yeah, like someone messaged into the Fightful podcast saying like, oh, everyone saw this coming. Like, no, you didn't. No one saw this coming. No one at the start of that segment was like, oh, this is where Sting's going to debut.
No, nobody thought that whatsoever. And again, like I said, when I heard the rumors, I thought you guys are reaching, like people are just dreaming way too hard. It's not going to happen. And that was just about it. And maybe that's just me being, you know, I don't know, not having these big imagination or whatever, but I just didn't see it coming. And so I was genuinely surprised. So I said this on my show, but I'll say it again. I had AEW on mute, okay? Because I was watching both shows. And so sometimes like I mute things, you know, just to kind of like, you know, balance things out. And when I was watching that, the lights went down and hey, like there's, you know, something on the screen, but I thought, all right, it's just going to be nothing. And I'm watching. And then all of a sudden I see the Sting words and I'm like, I pause and you see, I hop over, I unmute, I put the big screen on, and then afterwards I rewatched the whole thing just in case. And it was crazy and it was really fun to, you know, really just like capture the moment. And even though there was only a couple people in the audience, it still felt, you know, really huge. And my fiance was actually watching the show with me, and he was that person that grew up a WCW fan. He didn't grow up a WWE fan. I grew up a WWE fan. So I think the moment was different for me than it was for him, because, you know, he's somebody that actually grew up watching WCW versus me. I went back and had to watch stuff because, again, I grew up a WWE fan, and there are certain some people I think watched both promotions at the same time. And then there was people that, you know, pick sides. And growing up, my uncle who got me into wrestling, he was a WWE fan only. So that's what I was shown. I didn't even know WCW existed. Okay. That's really sad. Every time I tell my fiance that, he gets so mad. He's like, well, you were watching like the lame product, and trolled me about it and nonstop. And I'm like, whatever. Like, I know about it now, obviously, but you know, growing up, it's very different. So I thought that the moment probably felt even more grander. It felt grander for me. Then it felt even more grander for those that, you know, grew up with WCW.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The lastly, before we sort of move on from this, there have been as I said this on the show yesterday, if a tweet comes into me that starts with "if WWE had done this," that's an instant mute for me. And the argument is, like, you know, no one was excited. If Sting had done this in WWE, everyone would have been crapping all over it. I'm excited for Sting in AEW. I'm excited for him to do matches. If Sting is then in world title programs, then, and he, like, they put the title on him and he then becomes the focus of the show and they stop pushing younger guys in order to do Sting, that is when those arguments can then come in, because I don't think that is the right use of Sting. Sting is a special guy, but he is not the sort of person that you should be putting in the world title picture, holding the world heavyweight championship at the age of 61. It should be guys like Omega, Moxley. It should be MJF. It should be these guys that you are building and cultivating. So, yeah, for Sting, if going after the TNT title, I think that's slightly different, because, you know, like, him versus Darby Allin seems like that'd be pretty cool. Like, that seems like everyone's been saying that since Darby Allin came in. It's like, oh, it's like a little mini Sting. It's like Sting and Jeff Hardy had a wrestling baby. So, like, Darby versus Sting for the TNT title, that, I think that's slightly different. But yeah, like, I don't want to see them overexpose him and push him beyond his means.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Again, I think they just really have to preserve it, keep him, you know, fresh, keep him exciting, because he could do that himself. But I guess just don't overthink it. Be simple. I think that's what WWE did. I think they overthought the whole thing when it could have really been this simple, you know, give us the big, you know, greatest hits, and, you know, the fans will eat it up and they'll love it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the way I would put this, don't Goldberg the situation, because, hey, it was really exciting. It was really exciting when Goldberg came back. I was super excited when Goldberg came back, and then he won the title from Kevin Owens, and I was less excited about it. Then he came back again, and I was really excited, and then he beat The Fiend, and I was less excited about it.
And now everyone hates him.
Everyone hates him.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want that. But BTW, I do not hate Goldberg. I am not on that boat.
Love Goldberg. Do you know what he did at SummerSlam with Dolph Ziggler? That's what I want to see from Goldberg. Like, that was an amazing use of Goldberg. Right. Just before we get onto the mailbag, looking at the results from the viewership for AEW and NXT last night, probably understandably, AEW did very, very well. 913,000 viewers, so not quite the million mark, but, you know, pretty close to it, which is way up, obviously, from the 712 they did the previous week. It's the best number they've had since September 9th, and drew 1.016 million viewers in the all. Oh, sorry, that was the they drew. Sorry, try that again. That was the show that did that, the September 9th one. And then the show drew 543,000 viewers in the all-important 18 to 49 demographic. NXT did 658,000 viewers, which is down from the previous week, and drew 200,000 viewers in the 18 to 49 demographic. So, yeah, massive, massive jump for AEW. I would really like to hope that that will continue into next week. Obviously, Impact's going to get a great bump next week, because the Kenny Omega's going to be featured on the show. So, I would like to hope that AEW can at least get into that sort of 850, 900 mark again next week, because, yeah, getting a 1 week viewing is great, but it's about retaining those viewers and making them come back to watch the show again next week.
Are you surprised that they didn't hit that 1 million mark? Because considering the promotion and everything that went into this, I kind of think it's a little bit scary that they didn't hit that 1 million mark. It's like, where are these people at?
Yeah, I'm surprised that they didn't, because, you know, that September 9th one did. And I thought the fact that it was a world title program, it's Moxley Omega, everyone figured that Omega was winning the title. I think maybe the go home show for War Games, because there were some really big matches on NXT this week, that maybe that might have affected it in some way. I don't know, maybe there's still some holdover from the holidays. I don't know. But I was, yeah, kind of surprised that it didn't hit the 1 million mark.
I will say this, though, now the fact that they have sort of embedded into people's minds, if you've noticed, they've been doing little things, not all little, but certain things on the show that are making now AEW Dynamite seem like an unpredictable show. So, I mean, just even simple things like when Jon Moxley just casually dropped, hey, my wife is pregnant at home. That's something that nobody expected, right? Then this whole thing with Sting. Another different thing, obviously a lot, you know, I guess you can say like bigger, but it was just now I feel that fans probably have it in their head or should start getting it in their head that, hey, I should tune into AEW Dynamite because, you know, something can happen and I don't want to be missing it because look at last week, Sting came out and then, you know, there's this, you know, news coming out the week before that. And I'm sure there's other, you know, little examples that, you know, will pop up, but it's just, that's good. And I think that wrestling shows need to have that because it keeps people tuning in consistently each and every single week. So like keep, you know, bringing the excitement, keep adding the possibility that anything is possible and anything can happen on the show. You don't want to go in knowing, okay, nothing's really going to happen. And unfortunately, that's the big problem right now with Raw is that you don't really feel like anything major is going to happen. And they used to have that element and unfortunately they lost it and hopefully they can get it back. And you know, we kind of have that with SmackDown, but I think SmackDown, it's more of just like the storylines and the stars that are on there that people really want to see. So each show is bringing something different, but I do think that having the element of anything can happen would really help, you know, keep those numbers growing.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Do you like quizzes? Do you like wrestling? Do you like watching self-professed experts in their fields being exposed as dangerous frauds? Then you'll love Quizzlemania, brought to you by Parts Funknown, the team behind acclaimed wrestling RPG No Rolls Barred. Join us every week as four wrestling pundits pit their knowledge against each other in a cerebral wrangle for prizes, glory, and a bit of good old-fashioned escapism. Enjoy the videos live every Wednesday on Parts Funknown's YouTube channel, or subscribe right now to have them beam straight to your mobile device. Quizzlemania, it's the showcase of the Immorons.
Well, let's dive into your Patreon mailbag questions. If you want to submit a question to the mailbag, all you got to do is become one of our awesome pledge hammers on Patreon at any dollar amount. Leave a comment in the community tab labeled mailbag. Do not email me. I will just lose it. Let's get through these. Jamie said, I'm back on the road running, hoping for 15 kilometers today if my old legs can take it. Best of luck to you. And my question is, when WWE stars left for AEW, there was this perception that it was the land of opportunity. For some, this worked. Brody Lee, John Moxley. However, the likes of Sean Spears and maybe Matt Hardy, that doesn't seem to be the case. At that point, is it time to look at the wrestler rather than the company?
I've always thought that you should look at the wrestler, not just the company. I think that a lot of wrestlers, they don't get the proper opportunity. And we've seen that happen. But I do think that a lot of it also has to do with the wrestler itself. I mean, look at Becky Lynch. She's talked about, you know, always being the person in the shadows, not necessarily getting her marquee moment. Look at her. She's the perfect example of somebody that found a different route to, you know, get to superstardom. And, you know, she got over. And so it's kind of, but I think it depends on your mentality and how you see things, because there's a lot of factors that go into it. But I do think a huge part of it is, you know, the person itself.
Yeah, we said this, like, even before AEW came around, is that, like, not everyone who leaves WWE gets to be Cody Rhodes. Like, not everyone that leaves WWE is going to have that. Because Cody Rhodes left WWE, right? Like, they let him go, and he was just like, okay, knuckle down. This is what I'm going to do. This is my dream. This is my list of goals, and I'm going to do everything I can to complete these goals. Whereas there are some that leave and be like, well, I was a WWE guy, so I'm going to get booked, and I'm going to get put on the marquee, formerly known as, or, you know, former WWE star, this, that, and the other. So yeah, I think sometimes it does come down to the wrestler. I think that AEW have been guilty of, I think Sean Spears is a good example of someone who was like, oh, this is going to be his time. They're going to really show that you can do a lot with him. And unfortunately, they haven't done a massive amount with him. Like, he had that one program with Cody, and then really hasn't done much since then. I still stand by. I think he should have won that feud, and they could have extended it out. But yeah, like, I think you're right. Like, I think it's kind of a combination of both, I think, in a way. It's like, but you don't know what you've got until, like, Becky Lynch is someone that we as fans were just like, god damn, why aren't you doing anything with Becky Lynch? She's the best. And the company were like, no, we're not. And then she became this huge star, and you're like, see, told you. I don't know if there's any, like, those ex-WWE guys in AEW that we're all saying, that like, that guy there, with the exception of Miro, maybe, but like,
yeah, Miro.
But he's only been there for like a handful of months. It's not like he's been there for 5 years and we're going like, guys, come on, Miro's right there. Like, it's been, you know, a handful of weeks. Matthew Makovsky says, hello, Danuk. My question this week is regarding massive pops that we didn't get in the No Fans era. What are some of the pops that you think the WWE or an AEW you wish had happened in front of fans? A few that come to mind. I mean, and Matthew's got a lot here, and I think he might have named all the best ones. A few that come to mind: Drew's title win, Bayley turning on Sasha, Keith Lee becoming double champion, Bucks versus FTR, the Becky pregnancy announcement, Roman Reigns' return, Pac return, Moxley Kingston feud, Drew showing up on SmackDown, Keith Lee pinning Randy Orton. Like, there's, I mean, I don't know, Matthew, you may have listed all of the moments there.
I think the only other ones would probably be the Undertaker retirement. Did he mention Roman Reigns' return?
He did.
That one. Okay, he got that one. And I feel like there's probably some more obvious ones, but those are definitely the key ones there, which, by the way, I can't even believe the Becky Lynch thing happened this year. That feels like that was last year. It was in the same year.
I know, it feels so long ago, but yeah, like the Becky one in particular would have been an amazing moment in front of fans. Undertaker's retirement, like watching Hell in like Survivor Series, we kept saying it like, this is nice and everything. In a way, it was a bit weird, but it was like, man, I wish there was actual fans here to, rather than piped in, thank you, take a chance, like an actual crowd doing it.
Poor guy, man. Like, think about it. Like, the biggest, one of the biggest legacies in wrestling history, and this had to happen when he was retiring. Like, had he just been, I don't know, retired a year later or even a year before, things would have been so much more different. Ugh.
I mean, this is going to be very bad for podcast listeners, but I want to give a shout out to your nails that you've got there. Fabulous nails you have today.
Oh my gosh. I should have redone them, by the way, but they're a little messed up right now. But, you know, I try to add some color. I try to switch it up, you know, got to add some fun into your life. This is the only fun I have.
Well, like Sharpay, I think you look fabulous. Brian Heath says, Danuk, I hope you're having amazing weeks. What's a wrestling storyline you'd like to see in the next 2 years? Can't be an invasion or it can't be a ripoff of other storylines. Brian Heath, you're asking us to book things. Denise and I are not good at booking things or coming up with inventive storylines. We're not creative people.
Or what about like dream scenarios? Because mine is definitely seeing Hangman Page eventually become the face of AEW. That's not an actual storyline, but it's a thing that I would like to see happen in the next 2 years.
Yeah. Ollie pitched this in the news yesterday, and I totally love it, which is that, you know, we're telling this story of Hangman Page, Kenny Omega has effectively turned his back on AEW because he's siding with Impact Wrestling and Don Callis. This is the time for Hangman Page to save AEW and win that world title and bring it back home and all that sort of stuff. Like, I like, and that's the moment that we want to see is Hangman Page finally beat Omega and finally lift to that title, which it's a little way off yet, but I can't wait for it.
That is a brilliant idea, and I hope AEW listens to that because I would love to see that play out.
Timothy Berry, thanks for reading out my question last time. It was wrestling related. However, this time I've got something different related. It's a friend. Yes, I'm a friend's Mark.
How you doing? This just happened, by the way. This was accidental.
My favorite episode is the pivot episode where Ross helps take the couch up the stairs. Can you give me your best impression of Ross yelling pivot?
You already did it. Is that your impression?
Yeah, absolutely. Pivot.
I don't think I could do it. I'm so bad at accents. Pivot. No, okay, that was so bad. I'm so sorry for everybody's ears that I just blew out right now. I'm so sorry. I don't know what I'm doing. But you know what we've never discussed? Who is your favorite Friends character? You could only pick one.
It's Rachel. Rachel is the best character. Rachel, she's the most consistent character throughout the entire show. She is the one who has got a consistent start and a consistent end. She is always the funniest person. I think that Jennifer Aniston is so underrated on that show. I think she stands head and shoulders above pretty much everyone else on that cast.
We can't be friends anymore.
Why not?
So first of all, my number one pick is Ross. I love Ross. Oh, I find him so funny. Second, Monica. I love Monica. I actually relate to her more than I do the Rachel character.
Yeah. Is it the cleaning thing?
No, it's the more of the, I don't even know. It's the very organized, no fun type of person. Like it's fun for you, but not for everybody else.
It's just organized fun. It's, yeah, you know, it's organized still fun.
Exactly. I like to have organized fun.
No, I've always, like, because my biggest issue I've had with Friends, like, I think by series 10, you know, the final series of Friends, everyone has sort of become caricatures of themselves. So I think like Ross and Joey becomes like so dense he can barely tie his own shoes together.
Yeah.
Chandler is like making snarky remarks. Monica's whole like, oh, everything's got to be cleaned, so it gets ramped up to 11. Phoebe becomes a bit more dulled down and that's nicer. Rachel is the character that she's got one really nice and easy to follow arc, and it's a wonderful arc to see of the spoiled rich girl who, you know, becomes her own person and, you know, becomes a mother, spoilers, and, you know, and I think that that's really, really lovely. And I think that, oh man, there was that person who emailed in last week. It's actually Callum, I know, because he's got an email about questionnaire, and I've just spoiled something. Really sorry, bud. But yeah, so I Rachel is hands down for me my favorite character.
Well, she's third on my list. I love Rachel, but she's third because I love Ross. He's so funny.
Yeah, but he's also a sociopath. Like, he's
I relate to that. I relate to psychotic people, Luke. Some of us are not properly sane, all right? Some of us are psychotic.
My sandwich. Marcus... Marcus Saul Campbell, what's your favorite set from 2000s WWE? I really like the Taboo Tuesday Cyber Sunday sets. Mm-hmm. On an unrelated note, what do you think of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Never seen it. And my answer is the Backlash set with the, I don't know what you call it, those things the that pincers. Like, what are they?
Pincers.
Like, is that what they're called?
Well, I think they're like, yeah.
I call them like knives.
Yeah. Yeah, the Backlash 2000 set is so, so cool. Like, it's like they're just constantly swinging. Oh, it's badass.
I've also never seen, I've seen like a handful of episodes of It's Always Sunny because my wife watches it. I should really give it a go myself. But as we've discussed in this podcast before, if I'm not watching something with my wife, then I'm just, it's likely it's not going to happen because I don't have time like to myself to watch the shows because my wife and I watch everything together.
And she already graduated from TV school. She's watched everything.
Exactly. She's completed Netflix.
Yes.
Wrestling Talk Sign Guy. Less of a question this one, but just some clarification to a question that we had last week, which is, I thought it was interesting. It's a bit long, so do bear with us. I'm a WWE shareholder. After listening to you talk about WWE financials last week, I want to share some information that may give people a different perspective. Profit is not only important an important number to a company. I invested right after the Saudi Arabia crisis when the stock took a hit. And while I've received about $1 per share in dividends, the stock price has actually fallen about $11 per share despite initial recovery, meaning that for every share I own, I have a net loss of about $10. This is because of what is known as the market cap, the stock price multiplied by the number of shares, which gives you an idea of how valuable investors see the company as being. The stock price has gone down because investors don't think the company is worth nearly as much as it was a year ago. While WWE may be putting more money in its coffers as profit, the total income has gone down without things like live shows. Compared to a year ago, Vince McMahon's personal stocks were worth about $300 million less. Dividends and profits aren't nearly as important as stock price, and with the rise of AEW as a legitimate competitor, if even not a threat, I worry that WWE will have trouble growing back to its previous size. As an investor, this makes me worry about its stock price, and I may be cutting my losses in the near future, despite record profits. What I want to see going forward is how WWE plan on growing their gross income, not their profits.
First of all, I'm so thankful for him to send in this information because it's very, very helpful. Secondly, I'm horrible at math, so this was very hard to follow for me. But third of all, I appreciate it. And fourth, I think I just have to see it visually to sort of understand the full scope of what he was saying right now.
Yeah, like I need Wrestling Talk Sign Guy, who's been like, he's been a fan of ours for ages. He's had signs at AEW shows, like with like Wrestling Talk, it was behind Sammy Guevara. It's really, really funny. But yeah, I kind of want to sit down with you and sort of like have you sort of map this out for me so you can like really explain this, because I'm too dense, I'm too thick to fully understand how stocks work.
We need cartoon picture books. We need the children's illustrations of how stocks work. You need to put it in a picture book for us. Definitely for me. I know for a fact. You got to like explain it in a very, very basic, which he did. I'm sure it gets more complicated than what he just said right now. Way more complicated. Yeah. You know what I never get? Why are all these people screaming on the stock floor?
I don't know. A film I absolutely love is Trading Places. Like I love that movie, but I don't know if I fully understand what happens at the end. Like I don't know, because it's all about stocks and stuff. I don't think I fully get it.
I don't remember. There was one movie with Cameron Diaz and Ashton Kutcher. I forget which one. I think it was the Vegas one where job.
What happened in Vegas?
Yes. Isn't her job where she's like out there screaming? And I'm like, why is she screaming? Why are these people screaming? What are they doing? I don't know. I would love to find out.
Yeah. We had this when we watched The Wolf of Wall Street, and my wife turned to me and was like, I don't think I fully get how they're making money. And I was like, they are. Like, I think like the best thing I could tell you is they are. Like that is the lesson we need to learn here. They're making lots of money.
If we have anyone from Wall Street watching us right now, please explain this to all of us, to both of us.
With pictures, please. Yeah. We need like Dora to come out and really tell us what's going on here.
Hey, that's a show right there. Pitch it to Nickelodeon.
Adam Gallagher says, hi Luke and Denise. I had a question on Quizzlemania about Vince shoot fighting wrestlers in 2020 that was taken entirely too seriously for my liking. Sorry about that. So I figured I'd pose a question that couldn't possibly be taken so seriously. What is the smallest weapon you'd be willing to defend yourself against an angry charging Brock Lesnar? No guns, that's cheating. Fun fact, I once asked Mick Foley this a few years ago at a meet and greet, and his answer was a Colt 45, hence my no guns rule. New patron, so hello, and all that. You guys are the best, even Mr. Davis. Thank you very much, Adam. I mean, surely it's got to be like the barbed wire 2x4. I mean, that's something you want to have, right?
Oh, you're so much more hardcore than me. That's a good pick. You know what I was going to say? A bow and arrow. I don't know why. Wait, does that classify as... He said small weapon. I think we're thinking too large here. We got to scope it down.
Me, if you'd have given me 1,000 guesses, I never would have got to bow and arrow. Like,
well, I was
guy over here.
I was trying to not think of something that was wrestling related, more of just something that of a weapon that I would like to use or know how to use.
I was do you know how to use a bow and arrow?
No.
Oh, Denise, I would not suggest taking a bow and arrow then, because you're going to be there popping up shots and be falling down in front of you.
Luke, I have a question for you. Are you a Hunger Games fan?
I think I've seen all the movies. I've certainly seen the first one.
Okay, well, you should know now that I read all the books. I watched the movies. I've never gone to a movie theater to watch any movie at midnight in my life. But I did so for all the Hunger Games movies because my dream is to be Katniss. I want to be Katniss. And so that is why I want to learn how to do the bow and arrow. Even though I've never taken a class or a course, never even looked it up, I still want to do it.
Josh B17 says, hi, Luke and Denise. What is the one show from everyone's favorite match on the card wasn't your favorite? For example, Hangman vs. and Omega versus the Young Bucks of Revolution is almost everyone's favorite match from that show, but I preferred Cody versus MJF, although the tag match was great. That's a really, really interesting question, because like that Revolution show, like, you know, we always talk about the Omega Young Bucks match and Hangman Page, but like that's the same show that's got Pac versus Orange Cassidy on it, which is a great match. It's so good.
I have the perfect answer. So let's dedicate this segment to Louis Dane Gore. The match that everybody liked that I was like, is definitely the Young Bucks FTR.
Yeah.
Because I definitely liked Kenny and Hangman a whole lot more.
Oh, Denise.
There you go. That was my perfect answer.
I mean, it is a good answer. I mean, mine really is like, and this should come as no surprise to anyone, apart from Denise, maybe. Everyone talks about Rock Austin at WrestleMania 17. It's the hardcore triple threat. It's the greatest match on the card. It's the greatest match in WrestleMania history.
I already told you I'm never going to forget that ever in my life.
Flaming Live says, before I ask my question, I just want to let you go. This will be my last mailbag for a while. Funds have finally run dry. Very sorry to hear that, Flaming Live. But you know, dude, you got to do what's right for you. So thank you very much for your months of service. First question is a tough one. If you had to give a follow-up to one of the other two, if you had to give up one of the following so that the other two had a better chance of succeeding in the world, what would it be? Would you rather give up your career, your significant other, or your best friend?
Wait, and we have to get rid of one?
Yes, you have to give up one so the other two can succeed.
Definitely my best friend, because I don't have one.
Oh, Denise, that's so sad.
I mean, I have friends, but I've never considered, I don't have like a BFF, you know, like your peanut butter and jelly. Like, I'm peanut butter, there's no jelly.
Oh, Denise, that makes me so sad, because I was going to say, like, I would give up my career because my significant other is my best friend. So that
okay, but
way,
see, that's a trick question, though. See, I could say the same thing about my fiance. I could say he's my best friend because he is, but I'm thinking more in terms of like a girl best friend. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I suppose that'd be my buddy Johnny. What's my best man? So yeah, I'd still sacrifice my career so that those two could succeed.
See, I can't do it. I can't do it. I think I would put career first. I can't do it. Oh. I could find another man. I'm just kidding. And I've said this, like, me and my fiance joke about this all the time. I'm like, dude, like, it's like my career, then you, then like every. Well, actually, no, hold on. It's like Taylor Swift career. Like, kind of go from there. I'm joking.
Of course. Chopper JJ says, hello to Nuke. I just want to say thank you for all the incredible hard work. I'm very thankful. My question is, if you could make your own six-pack Hell in a Cell match, which current wrestlers would you pick from any promotion? Have a nice day, jam that jam. So the Armageddon Hell in a Cell match from 2000. Pick six people that you'd like to see in it, like with today's roster of wrestlers.
I'm just going to pick six people that I really enjoy. Hangman Page, Adam Cole. Mm-hmm. I'll throw in Will Ospreay in there just for fun. I'm going to throw in Kenny. I'll throw in Tommaso Ciampa. And I'll throw in Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, Drew's a good shout. I think I would take out Will and I'd put Moxley in. That'd be my only switch I think I would do from that. But that's a really good lineup. Jonathan Hedman says, hello, Lukewarm and Ebenezer. I hope you're well.
Wait, what?
Ebenezer Scrooge, because your bloody, like, your shoot comments.
You're supposed to be yelling at me today. I was preparing myself since Monday. Dude. I've been stressed out about this.
Dude, it's coming up. There is a question that is coming up that I've been saving that my thoughts on your shoot comments. But anyway, hello, Lukewarm and Ebenezer. I hope you're well. First, Luke, can we all agree that the Star Wars Holiday Special is the worst Christmas Star Wars thing ever? Yes, it is. With the exception of the Attack of the Clones, which is indefinitely worse. Also, please tell me if Die Hard, Iron Man 3, Gremlins, and It's a Wonderful Life are truly Christmas movies or just movies that take place at Christmas, and what makes a Christmas movie for you? Great question, Jonathan Hedman. This is what the Patreon mailbag is all about. Die Hard, Stephen D'Souza, who I have interviewed on many, many occasions. I interviewed him for my book, has said that Die Hard is a Christmas movie. While I may not particularly agree with him, I'm not going to go against what the writer of the movie. I'm not. If he says it's a Christmas movie, then it's a Christmas movie. Iron Man 3? Nope. It's just set at Christmas. Gremlins? I'm going to give a half on that. It sort of is, it sort of isn't. It's a Wonderful Life 100% is a Christmas movie. And boy, howdy, does that movie make me cry. We watched it last year at Christmas. Me, my brother, my wife, his girlfriend, and my mum and dad. And at the end of it, like, my mum cries every time she watches that movie. But this is the first time she was watching it where she didn't cry. Where'd you go?
I got kicked out.
You got kicked out?
I have no idea. I got kicked out of StreamYard. Everything just went away, like the whole thing. Oh, that was weird. No, that's never happened before. That's terrifying.
Right. Well, we'll just continue. I'm just going to do a little.
Okay.
Okay. Just make sure. Yeah. Okay. Right. Cool. We're good to go. My mum usually cries every time we watch that movie, but this is the first time in years that she didn't cry while watching it until she turned around and saw me and my brother crying. And then that set her off, and then she started crying because me and my brother were there, like, sobbing tears, because it's such a beautiful movie and a wonderful, wonderful Christmas movie.
I've never seen it.
Denise.
I know. Don't worry. You can get mad at me later.
Oh, it's coming. Winter is coming. What makes a Christmas movie for me? As long as if it's got a nice sort of, like, lovely sort of heartwarming message around it, that kind of one makes, like, that's why I love Christmas. I love Christmas because it's all about, like, people that you love getting together and having a lovely, lovely time together. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Like, Home Alone is a great Christmas movie, Denise. We'll get to it. Before that moment, the reuniting moment of Catherine O'Hara and Macaulay Culkin. It's just getting teary just thinking about it. It's beautiful. Callum says, this Callum is where we've got the Friends problem. Sorry, Callum. I watched Friends up until the end of season one after your podcast last week. It's amazing. Can't believe I've never watched this show before. I kept on thinking during this, I'm literally Ross. So my question is, did this kind of thing come to your mind when you first watched the show? And if so, what was it? Like, so what was your sort of your first thoughts of Friends when you first saw it?
I think my first thought was, wow, this show's actually funny. Because so the reason why I started watching Friends was I was in college and I was taking a TV class. I forgot I don't even remember what the class was, but they showed us an episode of Friends to show an example of something. And I enjoyed it this few minutes. I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. So I think I went into this and I was like, oh, I had no idea that this show was going to be what it was. But I kind of had that same thought where I was like, oh my God, I'm like Ross too. So I can get it. Like, you see a character and you start to think, like, oh, I have similarities with this person.
So I started watching Friends season three was when I first joined on, because my brother's 6 years older than I am, and my brother and my parents watched, like, series one and two, and they would talk about it and they loved it. And so, like, when I start season, I wasn't allowed to watch it. It was like, it was almost too adult for me, because, you know, series three is like, I'd probably been, when was series three? Friends season three. What, I wonder if that aired. I'm just trying to work out how old I was. Friends season three aired in 1996. So I would have been 10 when the show aired. So I then started watching it because, like, oh, the cool older people, like my brother, are watching this and they really like it. And so, yeah, then I was just, I watched it because it was the cool thing to watch. And I was like, oh, this is actually really funny. This is really, really cool. Now I feel like an adult, and now I can join in with the conversations that my brother, like, I remember my brother and my parents laughing about when Chandler grows the mustache to try and look like Richard.
Aww.
And they were like, oh, it's one of the, my brother said it's one of the funniest things ever. Like when he walks in with that mustache. And I then got to join in those conversations to be like, oh, wasn't it really funny when X happens?
You're like, I'm finally part of the adult conversation. Did you watch the show in order, like in order of the episodes?
Yeah, because like that was like, so season 3 started airing on Channel 4. That's when I jumped in to watch it. So maybe I was like 10, 11 years old. And then I watched it all the way through until the end.
I watched it completely out of order. Like I bounced around episodes. So I was very confused. And then eventually I ended up watching it like all throughout its, you know, completion.
I mean, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I think we talk about this a lot on the podcast. Friends is still shown like every single day, 365 days a year. Friends is shown on UK TV. Like there is a channel that is essentially dedicated to it. If there's an hour of the day Friends is on in this country, and they don't often show them in order. They just sort of like show like random episodes. Like, you know, over the Thanksgiving period, they just show the Thanksgiving episodes. So my wife and I used to have a game, which was like guess the season. So where you try and work out which season it's currently on. You'd be like, okay, well, Rachel's got that hair, but Ross and Rachel aren't together. Monica and Chandler aren't together. It's like, you know, there's all of this sort of stuff, the way that you can play guess the season.
That's really fun. I would like to do that.
Alan Montoon, hello, Team Danuk. I'm hoping you're doing well this week. I've got another set of words for Luke to say in Spanish.
Oh, no.
Even though he may not realize it, I feel like Luke is learning and improving his Spanish every week, even though he's having trouble pronouncing orange. I can't remember how to do it, which was really funny. So I think about this because a lot of people keep sending us like, these Spanish words, but I don't think I'm actually learning anything. I feel like I'm literally just saying words and then I forget them.
Are you not retaining them? You're not retaining this information? You have to like practice more.
Yeah, if you'd have asked me what's blue, even though that's what we did last week, I cannot remember. But fork is tenedor.
Tenedor.
Nailed that one. Knife. What's the other one? Cuchillo.
Oh, you're way off on that one.
What is it then?
It's cuchillo.
Cuchillo. Okay.
Cuchillo.
Cuchara, then, I'm going to guess is for spoon.
Oh, yeah. Okay, you did that one pretty well, actually. Cuchara, yeah.
Cuchara. And napkin, servilleta.
Servilleta. You could have had it. You just got to pronounce, like, you got to hit it harder, I think. I think you're speeding through all of the words, and instead of, like, focusing on, like, each, like, sound that each, like, letter makes, if that makes any sense at all.
My wife says that to me a lot as well. Moen Carnip. Hello, Luke and Denise. Bluechew.com/ use the code Fightful. Hello, Luke and Denise. Hope you guys are doing well. Glad to hear that Jeff Hardy is doing better after that scary bump on Raw. While it was unfortunate, I think there's an opportunity for it to lead to a storyline. After suffering that bump, Jeff loses his confidence. He feels like he can no longer be Jeff Hardy, and he's too scared to take all those sorts of risks. This could go on for months and build to a moment of WrestleMania where he finally does a big spot, i.e. jumps off a ladder. Anyways, just a suggestion. What do you guys think?
I never thought about that. That's actually pretty interesting. And I think given the storylines that Jeff Hardy has had to work with as of late, this one would probably be a little bit of an improvement over those.
It really would be. Jeff Baltry, greetings, Luke Warm and Hollywood Salcedo. I've been hearing that WWE is possibly pushing to get live crowds back as early as the Rumble. Do you think it's smart to have crowds back in any capacity, considering the upswing in recent positive viral cases in the United States?
No, so we're actually about to go in like a serious lockdown here in California. It's been like the news like just broke today where like the governor broke things down in like regions. So we're probably going to go into like a 3-week lockdown. And so definitely here, it's not going well. I don't know about like the other states. I'm sure they're not doing as well either. But I think California is more strict compared to all the other states. So it's not looking good. Based on that, I would say no. But then there are talks about vaccines. And, you know, so I don't know. But I just doesn't feel like it. But it doesn't feel like it right now. I don't know what it's going to be like, you know, down in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, unless you just do it in Florida, where just, from what I gather, anything goes. Like, it's a lawless state.
It is so opposite from California. It's weird. It's like night and day in the difference.
LJ Mickey, do you think that WWE or AEW has at the moment any talent besides Roman Reigns that has any chance of achieving mainstream fame like The Rock, John Cena, and Batista? They do. WWE has Becky Lynch. 100%. That is a mainstream star on your hands.
Yeah, I agree. I can't wait to see her come back. I mean, I don't know when that's going to be, but I can't wait to see her come back.
Like, you know, there's already been talk Marvel are interested in having her in an MCU movie. So,
oh,
like,
really?
Yeah. It was like, it was earlier this year. It was before she got pregnant and everything. Like, Marvel were really interested in putting her in a film. So I think there is a lot of Hollywood interest in Becky Lynch because she has got star presence. So, yeah,
and a very unique look too. Something that I can definitely see in like a Marvel or some sort of superhero movie.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Here it comes. Ket, what's up, guys? Denise, how dare you say Home Alone is overrated? It's one of the best Christmas movies ever. What do you have against it?
So first of all, you should know that all my social media since Monday has been flooded with Home Alone stans attacking me. The Home Alone stans are alive and well. Is that like a Home Alone thing? Oh yeah,
it's the Home Alone reference
from like the movie that he's watching. Exactly. See, I saw. Look, wow. Look, I just think it's overrated. Okay, it's completely overrated. I don't think that it hits the mark in terms of like. Okay, so he gets forgotten about. Cool. All right. Then he has this little adventure at home. Okay, cool. Whatever. Then his mom freaks out. She's like the only one that cares. Like the dad, from what I remember, doesn't even care. Like nobody cares but the mom.
They can't get home.
You know what else I think is dumb? You know what else I think is dumb about Home Alone? Why are they so freaked out at the fact that he's home alone? Is it really that big of a deal that he's home alone?
How old is he
in the movie?
I think he's meant to be under 10, I think, or maybe even about 10 years old.
I was home alone under 10 years old. You give a kid a remote control, you lock the doors, tell him not to open the door, give him some snacks.
Denise, you've got street smarts. You've got street smarts, kid. You're like Macaulay Culkin's a spoiled brat. Kevin McAllister doesn't know. That's the whole the setup of the movie is he can't function on his own. Like that's what the first 10 minutes is setting up the fact that he can't do anything on his own. That's why it's scary. Then he's left home alone.
And then what is Home Alone 2 the one where it happens all over again? Like the same thing, the power goes off and they miss their flight or something?
Sort of. They actually do, but like he gets on a separate flight to them and he goes off to New York and they go off to wherever it is they go. Home Alone 2 is not as good. I will happily admit that. I try and watch it every year and I'm like, you know what? It's just not as good as the first one.
It doesn't look... I just don't get it. I feel like it doesn't pull my heartstrings. It doesn't like... bring me into the movie. I don't feel the connection that everybody else feels with it. And I know that all the Home Alone stans are going to attack me because I've been facing this drama nonstop since Monday. I didn't realize how many people loved Home Alone.
I mean, Denise, I mean, you broke my heart on Tuesday. That's all I'm going to say. You broke my heart with your messages. Like, and I quote, Home Alone is overrated. And I quote, Die Hard is boring. And I quote, Christmas is overrated. Like,
okay, Christmas is overrated, though.
Denise, come on, man. It's so good.
Okay, you're a December baby. You would say that, though. Christmas is in your blood.
It's awful being a December baby. Do you know how terrible it is being a December baby when you're a child? You get like my birthday is 11 days before Christmas. Do you know how many years I got like, well, this is gonna be your joint Christmas and birthday present because they're so close together. Like I have to wait the rest of the year for things like that. Like you want your birthday in the middle of the year.
That's really sad. But I just look, I just feel like Christmas is only fun the Christmas Eve, and that's it. Christmas Day, we don't even do anything in my family. Like Christmas Day, you just like sit at home and you're all bored. And then like Christmas Eve is fun because you get to eat. And the only thing I love about Christmas is opening presents, my presents. But I'm not into Christmas music, Christmas movies. They're okay, but I don't get in that like Christmas spirit. Like, yeah, I'll put up lights. I decorate the Christmas tree. The Grinch decorates Christmas trees in this house. And it's all nice. And, you know, I just like to, but it's not like something that I'm like, oh my God, it's Christmas.
Oh, Denise, I never thought I would hear these words from you. I really thought that you would be a Christmas kid like me. But yeah, you broke my heart with those. And I sent out that tweet where I was like,
yeah, so many people responded to that. I was in shock.
Yeah, I was so disappointed. Both you and Sean, because Sean said that Elf was overrated as well. I need to have words with him while we're at it.
Please do. I like Elf. I like Elf a lot.
Elf is a great movie. Oh, yeah. That also makes me cry, by the way. Oh, it's so beautiful. When they all sing, oh, it's lovely.
The difference, too, is that, like, you like, sweet, heartwarming stuff, right? I don't. Like, I don't like gushy, like, feelings and all of that. Like, I don't like crying. I don't like any of that type of stuff. So I think I try to, like, stay away from it.
But anyway, you said all of that, and I sent out that tweet, and I was like, there cannot be anything more in this podcast that will be any more controversial than those things. And then you said, I quote, I don't care for the Muppets.
Oh, yeah, I don't care for the Muppets.
Denise, I'll say that. I mean, I was about to say I was wearing Muppets pajamas. I'm not, because I changed them this week. I'm now wearing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles pajamas. But I was wearing Muppet pajamas earlier this week. I was wearing Muppet pajamas when I was listening to your podcast and how you, quote, don't care for the Muppets.
I don't care for the Muppets. Like, I just don't see what's so special about them.
They're loved. They're so fun. They're great fun. They're really funny. They're wonderful characters.
They're just Muppets. They're just puppets. They're just dolls. I don't get it. And Die Hard. Die Hard was so boring. I had to turn the TV off like 2 seconds in.
Denise, we're trying to get you over with this fan base. Stop saying these things.
No, you know what? I am standing up for those people that are always silent. I'm sure there is somebody else out there, some miserable soul just like me out there thinking, finally, we have someone on our side. I'm that person. I'm speaking up for the small minority of people.
I will say that I did get a lot of people reply to me being like, I actually agree with a lot of what Denise had to say on that podcast.
See? And, Thank you. Yeah, see, they're out there.
They're getting the ban hammer from me on Twitter. I'm not having any of that negativity on my timeline. I'm kidding. I'm not blocking them.
Are you going to take it that far? Are you going to ban people if they say the Muppets suck?
If anyone tweets me today saying the Muppets suck, you are getting blocked. Like 100% you're doing that because you're just trying to troll me. So Denise, don't you dare tweet me. I do not want to block you. I like you too much to block you on Twitter. But like,
no, I'm going to start a very controversial comment right now. Very ready for the controversy. Teletubbies are better than the Muppets.
Oh my God.
I like the Teletubbies. I used to watch them. How did that song go? Oh, I love the song. And then the little son.
You love it. You love it so much. And I know the song. I know the song. I didn't watch it when I was a kid either because I was too old when that show started. But I know the song. And you're here going like, oh, I love the Teletubbies. It's so much better than the Muppets. Can't remember how it goes, though.
I forgot the song.
Teletubbies. It's like it's one word. Muppets are great.
I forgot the song. That's one word. And then the slime, the pink slime that comes out. Oh, as a kid, I wanted to drink it so badly. I wanted to drink. I don't even know what it was, but I love the Teletubbies.
So, a little story about me. Every year, because my birthday is, as you mentioned, it's December. December 14th, my birthday. Every year, and this will be the first year where I'm not going to do it, I go to the Prince Charles Cinema in London, and I go to a Muppet Christmas Carol sing-along. And it is so lovely. We have some mulled wine, and we just sit there, and we watch the movie, and we sing at the top of our lungs all of the songs from the Muppet Christmas Carol, and it is a beautiful, wonderful time. That movie also makes me get a little bit teary, particularly when Tiny Tim dies. Spoilers for Christmas Carol. It's great. Last year, my mum has heard me do about, you know, because I always talk about this, and she was like, I want to go and do that with you, because I've not done that before. So we went, so it was me, my wife, my brother, his girlfriend, my mum, my dad, my father-in-law, and my mother-in-law all went to the Muppet Christmas Carol song, and we all sat in the same row, and we all sang Muppet songs. My mum, bless her heart, listened to the soundtrack ahead of time so that she could learn some of the words. It was so sweet, and I love that soundtrack, and I could sing it now, and it's just so, and do the voices as well, because it's great.
Your heart is so red, like so red and bright and shiny. I just realized that my heart is black.
Yeah, because you're the Grinch. You're the actual Grinch. We need your heart to grow three sizes that day.
you do the stuff that I only see in movies. Like, you know, those movies where people go and sing Christmas carols. I didn't know people really did that.
I did that last year. I was going to like singing Christmas carols in the town square. It was great.
See, like, I didn't know, like, that. I guess, like, in my life, I've never done any of that type of stuff. So for me, it's like a whole alien experience.
I said to my wife, my wife and I are moving soon. We're moving to a new area. And I was like, oh, do you think there'll be like a Christmas caroler group that I could join and we can just go around it? And she was like, if we are, you can do that on your own. And I was like, absolutely. And if there isn't, maybe I'll start one and we'll just go around and we'll sing some Christmas carols to everyone.
I have to send apology letters to all the movies that I watched. And I was like, wow, that is so fake. Like, no one does that. Like, who does that? Who lives their life like this? Who does this stuff? You do this stuff. You live the picture perfect life.
Oh, thank you so much. But it's here. And anyway, so I've got that off my chest now. I still consider you a friend. I still think you're a very nice person, but you're...
It's okay. People can come hate me on social media. I could take the heat.
You broke my heart a little bit. Right. There's actually so many mailbag questions. We have not got time to get into them now because we've run out of time.
People are going to hate us. They're going to be like, you didn't answer our mailbag questions.
I know, yeah. There's quite a few that we didn't get to. Let's try and do one more. Actually, do you know what? Let's end with this one. Let's end with Chris Duncan. With the sad passing of Pat Patterson this week, what are your favorite wrestling-related moments with him?
I feel... Okay, so I was listening to Wrestling Observer Radio when Dave was talking about it, and I think mainly, not a specific memory, I think it's more of the impact of a lot of the things that he did in wrestling that I thought were just like, dang, like, one person did all that? Like, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, My Pat Patterson is Stooges Pat Patterson. It's, you know, it's him and Briscoe with McMahon. And I loved Patterson and Briscoe as an act. Like, what a brilliant, brilliant combination of people. These sort of old goofballs that are just sort of like, you know, the Mr. McMahon's like, it's Mr. McMahon. Like, I love Gerald Briscoe cutting promos for him and stuff. It was wonderful. Mr. McMahon is the man. Like, it was... And like them with winning the hardcore title, like Gerald Briscoe winning the hardcore title, and then Pat Patterson stealing it off of him, all of that stuff, absolutely loved. I met Pat Patterson a couple of years ago at Wrestling MediaCon because he was one of our special guests at MediaCon. And I didn't like fully get a chance to sort of sit down and talk with him. But the one moment I did have is I was setting something up in this sort of canteen area. Like, we were setting up to do a shoot. I can't remember who we were interviewing. It might have been Sue Young. We were setting up something to do that. And then I had to go and get something from another part of the event. So I ran down these stairs. And as I was sort of like running down these stairs, I nearly ran into Pat Patterson. And he like proper like bumped into him. And I managed to stop myself and sort of go around him. But because of my mind was so focused on getting to my location, I hadn't really considered what I nearly did. So I just went, oh, sorry, Pat, and then carried on.
Well, at least you apologized.
But I called him Pat. Like, I was like, sorry, Pat, as if I knew him. And he just said, like, oh, that's all right. And I sort of like carried on my way. And it was until later, I was like, I cannot believe that I nearly bumped into Pat Patterson. And the only thing I could think of saying was like, sorry, Pat.
Like, you could have literally asked him any question ever, or like even or complimented him.
Called him Mr. Patton. Just at least, you know, something like showed some respect to him. But just go, sorry, Pat.
No, you know, I actually think Pat, I don't know. I'm not really a person that, is it weird to refer to people in their like last name? I actually feel it's more better to refer people in their first name. Like, I wouldn't want anybody calling me Miss Salcedo. I'd be like, ooh. That's not me.
No, I guess, but like, I think in sort of, particularly in the wrestling world, like, you know, it's one of those unwritten rules. Like, you know, if you don't go backstage and shake everyone's hand, then that's going to get you heat and stuff like that. And that's all I could think of was like, oh man, what if Pat, like, because he's an old school guy, what if Pat's going to have like heat with me now? And he's going to be like, that, he's not going to know who I am. But like, that bald guy, like, what's, you know, he ran past me and called me by my first name. The utter disrespect, the butter disregard that man had for my name.
How could he? Imagine you would be like, hey, like some security guy came up to you and like, hey, by the way, you got to go home. We had some comments about you.
Yeah. Mr. Patterson had some comments about you. And having that happening around. Yeah. So that's my Pat Patterson story. But he was really good at MediaCon and stuff. And I heard that he and Kenny McIntosh had a great night when they went out. We didn't get to go out with him because we were so tired, but we heard that they had a great night. But anyway,
That is all we've got time for on this edition. Really sorry we didn't get to all your mailbag questions. Unfortunately, Denise Salcedo is a Grinch, and we had to try and open up her heart and make it grow three sizes that day. I don't think that worked, though.
It shrunk. You know, I told my fiance, if he cries at the wedding, I'm when I'm walking down the aisle, if he cries, I told him I'm turning back around.
Why?
I don't want him to cry. And he's like, I'm gonna cry. And I was like, dude, please don't cry. If you cry at the wedding, I'd be so mad.
They cried at our wedding.
No, and that's okay. That's okay. Like, I don't care if people cry. I just don't want him to cry. I was like, I'm going to be like, I've even acted it out for him. I'll be like, walking, like, you cry, I'm turning around just like this and walking back. Y'all can enjoy the party. I'm out. I don't know what it is. I can't have him like crying or falling.
Oh, so that's the two things you got. Like, I've only got two requests of you on that day. Don't cry or don't fall.
No, I don't like him falling in general. I don't know what it is. What it just, like, I just find it like so like upsetting if someone falls. Like, it just, it's a character thing. Like, I, you know how Vince doesn't like people to sneeze? I don't like people falling or all right, I'm done. Cancel the show. Turn it off. End the stream.
So, I mean, you're obviously a big Grinch and you hate Christmas. So, like, when do you put your tree up?
We put it up like the second week of December.
Do you do it like begrudgingly? Do you like, oh God, I'm putting tinsel on. Oh, baubles.
No, I'm just more like, all right, let's get this tree up. Let's get it going. So it's me and my grandparents, right? They always fight about the lights. Something always goes wrong when we're putting up the lights on the tree. And so I'm just sitting there going, okay, while you deal with the lights, I'll come back with the decorations. And then, you know, we have fun. We do the tree. But then afterwards, it's just, you know, move on with your life.
So because we're moving house, we're not putting up any Christmas decorations. Just because it's more stuff for me to like pack up again. Like, we're trying to box up a house. Like, the last thing I need to do is take more stuff out, because I'm just gonna have to box it back up again. So that means I can't put up Christmas decorations until like the 19th of December, like, because it's like literally just before Christmas, right?
What? Wait, so when do you move into your new house?
So we move in on the 18th.
Oh, so you're really like day after I'm putting up my decorations.
If we could, I would do it on the 18th, but I think that may not happen. Like, I think that's the other things may have to be done on the 18th.
Is it hurting you right now that you don't have decorations in your house right now and it's December 3rd or 4th?
It is. It actually, like, it sucks, because I walk up and down the street and everyone's got all their Christmas decorations out and all their lights on their houses and stuff, and it makes me gutted that I'm not one of them.
Your street, like, your neighbors should, like, kick you out of the street for not participating.
It's fine. I'm moving. I'm leaving this street. Leaving this street behind me. But yeah, like, but like, my wife and I tomorrow, we're gonna have a we're gonna do, because we make it sort of a thing. We have like Christmas cocktails, and we have like sort of like snacks and party food. It's like, as our little Christmas tree putting up day. Like, you know, an evening we watch some Christmas movies and stuff. So we're still gonna do that tomorrow, just without the tree and without the lights.
Oh well, at least you guys are still doing something.
Yeah, it'll still be nice. Like, and I think that I can be a bit overbearing at times. Like, I think my love of Christmas, particularly like in the office last year, I was putting up the lights and I was putting up a tree and stuff. Like, I went into work early one day, like December 1st last year, I went in early so I could put the Christmas tree up and put the lights up. And everyone came in, like Laurie in particular came in and was like, oh, because Laurie hates Christmas.
Oh, thanks. Like, he's on my side here.
He's like, well, this is now just in the way. I'm like, but it looks so nice.
And how, when do you take them down? Are you that person that waits till like July to take it down?
Oh, no. As soon as December's over, like, Christmas is done. Like, because like, kind of like we were talking about with Sting, you don't want to overexpose Christmas. You don't want to like, you don't want to be Mick Foley here. Like, Mick Foley, you know, celebrates Christmas 365 days a year. That's too much. Like, because otherwise Christmas Day is not, it's not special. Christmas isn't special anymore. Like, I sort of know a lot of people were just like, this year sucks. I'm putting my tree up in November. I was like, no. I'm still holding on till December, because there's no need to put it up that early. I'm not going to listen to Christmas songs until December 1st.
Does your wife share the same love of Christmas that you do?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I've actually made her worse over the years. I think she likes Christmas more now because I'm like, I wake up like, hey, it's Christmas. Like, so we haven't got an advent calendar this year because we're not putting, like, we have, so my mum and my dad got me this sort of like homemade advent calendar thing, like from a shop. And basically you just put your own little treats in it. And then you sort of, you take them off and so you count down the days. But because we're not putting up our Christmas decorations, we haven't got it. So we're now just having an advent dance in the kitchen every day. So we just put on a Christmas song, whatever Christmas song is on the playlist, we just have a little dance to it in the kitchen. And that's how we are counting down the days till Christmas.
I am shook. I didn't realize how passionate you were about Christmas. Like, at all. I feel like if I pitched this idea, this, like, dancing advent thing to, like, anyone in my family, they would just, like, laugh in my face.
Denise, what are you talking about? Laugh.
Yeah, last year, my aunt, she's very, like, holiday-y type, and she loves Christmas, right? And she did a ugly Christmas sweater party. And I was so upset. I was like, thanks to you, I now have to spend $30 on this ugly Christmas sweater for one evening. I was so upset. And I even told her, like, this year, I was like, if you're going to do a Christmas party, can you, like, not do the ugly Christmas sweater? Because I don't want to have to pay for one.
Could you not just use the same one you did last year?
Well, so I did something really bad. Well, not really bad, actually. So I just went to the dollar store. And I bought, like, a random $1 decoration, and I got an orange sweater, and I safety pinned the decoration to my sweater, and I showed up like that, and nobody voted. I didn't win ugliest Christmas sweater.
So you had, like, legit a jumper made out of garbage, and you still didn't win.
No, I did not win. I was very upset. Well, because somebody, the other people that came into our party went all out. Like, they had, like, electronics on their sweater. Like, they went all out. And I was like, well, I didn't know we were going to get all creative. I was like, I spent $2 on mine. But I was
you got creative.
They're expensive. They're literally 30 something dollars. And I'm never going to use these Christmas sweaters ever. So I was
like, use them at Christmas. I've got, like, I don't have a collection of Christmas jumpers. Like, I've got a couple. Like, I've got that, the Home Alone one I was wearing on the podcast today. I've got a Sonic one. I've got a couple of other, like, ones that make me like an elf and this and the other. But I just sort of cycle them through. Like, my wife said to me this year, do not buy a Christmas jumper. We do not need to buy a new one. And I said, you know what? I don't need to buy a new one this year because I've already got, like, 5. Like, so that'll do me for a little while.
That's insane. I don't never bought one, never had one. Like, that last year was my first ugly Christmas sweater party.
Wow. We do. Like, when we get a group of friends together, we always try and, like, I was trying to, like, have a different Christmas jumper every year. And so, as you say, it does get really expensive. And you do only get to wear them for a certain period of the year. They just take up a lot of closet space. But yeah, we always get together. Not this year. We're doing it via Zoom this year. But yeah, like, that, the whole point of that is to try and show up in an ugliest Christmas sweater as you possibly can. It's good fun, man. It's good fun.
I was just there for the food and because we were doing a gift exchange, so I knew I was getting a gift.
No. I will say, I mean, you said, like, you know, Christmas is all about the food. Cannot, like, that is so true. Like, I love the fact that basically, like, for 5 days, I just get to eat all day long because there's just always food available. And I get to drink as well. Like, I'm not a huge drinker in my later years, but I only drink on, like, a Friday and a Saturday now, like Friday, Saturday evening. So, like, these are the days where I get to drink during the day. I get to have, like, I get to wake up. I can have some champagne, like, in the morning. This is great.
And no one can judge you because if they do, then they're a Grinch.
They're a Grinch, exactly.
I'm going to pop in on your Christmas morning and be like, Christmas sucks or something. I don't know. Or stop drinking.
I'm gonna text you, like, very first thing in the morning. You're gonna be woken up by the alerts because I'm gonna DM you being like, Happy Christmas, Denise. It's Christmas.
Are you those people that send Merry Christmas texts to people and, like, Happy New Year's?
Dude, I send you a Thanksgiving one. Of course I'm that kind of person.
Oh yeah. Oh man, I'm terrible. I don't send anybody anything. Like, I don't send, like, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, like, Happy New Year. That one, I remember one year, me and my family were just like, let's see who gets the most Happy New Year texts. And I got a few. I was so proud.
So me and Ollie, a few years back, when we were very, very drunk, we were at separate parties, but like we just sort of texted each other, like, you know, Happy New Year when it ticked over. And we were both so drunk that we sent each other like really like these sort of ugly selfies that was like, I'm taking it a really like bad angle. And it was like putting the stupid face. And it's now become a thing every year on New Year's Day or, you know, New Year's Eve, we text each other a really bad selfie to say Happy New Year.
I love that tradition. That is a great tradition. That's awesome.
But yeah, you can expect a Christmas text from me because I am that sort of person. I'm like, I was thinking about this today. Like 2020 has been, you know, it's been a terrible year for a lot of people, but I've made loads of new friends. So it's been really nice. So like when it came to Thanksgiving, I sent all those new friends Thanksgiving messages because we don't have Thanksgiving here, but you guys do. So I was like, well, I'll just send some Thanksgiving messages. So dude, you can expect a text from me.
I'm very excited. I gotta say, I think this is the year that I've had the most friends too. So I might as well enjoy it while it lasts. Oh my God. I never realized how dark and sad my life was until right now. And I thought I lived like this very like happy, joyous life.
You're such a bright, bubbly person. Like you're literally one of the brightest, bubbliest persons I've ever met in my entire life. I was so surprised when you were like, Christmas sucks. And like, I'm a Grinch and I'm this cold black heart. And I was like, no, you don't.
I'm turning. I don't know what's happening to me. I'm nearing my 30s. That's what's happening.
Oh no. I mean, hey, if you're anything like me, when you hit your 30s, you're just going to get more, like it's going to go the opposite direction. And that's when your heart will grow three sizes. And that is when you'll get like we'll do this podcast in 5 years time. And you'll be like, Christmas is the best, you guys. Like, I absolutely love it. Like, Christmas is so great.
Wait, is that your impersonation of my voice?
It's not specifically you, but like California.
All right, that's it. Screw the Spanish. I need to hear Californian Luke for the rest of my life. All right, you got to continue on. More Californian Luke.
Well, that is all we got time for on this edition of the podcast. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back. Actually, Andy and Pete will be back tomorrow with the SmackDown podcast is tomorrow, you guys. And then we'll be back next week with the usual Raw and AEW reviews. Have a great weekend, everyone. Take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.